It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning August 16th, 2024. This summer marks 22 years since I became a U.S. citizen. The actual date is nicely apt. It was Flag Day, June 14th. And I can still win bets against native-born Americans who don't know what date Flag Day is, or even that we have such a patriotic day in the calendar. Well, we do, and I, for one, am very happy to celebrate it. I'm still British, of course. That's true for many, if not most, of my fellow immigrant, hyphenated Americans. We can't help maintaining a strong interest, and why shouldn't we, in our former countries of origin? My original country has presented over the last couple of weeks a decidedly menacing picture of politics at their worst. It followed hard on one of the most dramatic but straightforward and orderly political upheavals, a general election that decisively threw out the Conservative Party, who had held power for the previous 17 years, and replaced it with the Labour Party under Keir Starmer, now the UK Prime Minister. The crisis that almost immediately confronted him was, of course, the eruption of vicious riots in the streets from London to Bristol in the southwest to Sunderland in the far northeast of England. They were the direct result of mis- or more accurately disinformation being determinedly spread online through social media. And powerful lessons lie in this, I feel sure, for the American political scene and its coverage in the media. The British riots were clearly anti-immigrant, xenophobic, racist. We can confidently say all three, and we can equally confidently say they were orchestrated. Now, journalists have an inbuilt, or they should have, an inbuilt reaction of doubt whenever a government anywhere in the world claims that street demonstrations against it are organized by malign outside forces rather than being spontaneous popular uprisings. But in this British case, the objective evidence has been very clear. Orchestrated is the accurate, well-founded description for what happened, and we don't have to look very far for who was leading the orchestra. It began, you'll surely know, with a horrible multiple murder. Three young girls at a dance and yoga class in the Merseyside area were stabbed to death, and 10 more children injured. The suspect arrested was a 17-year-old boy. Social media, with Elon Musk's X, formerly Twitter, TikTok, and the end-to-end encrypted WhatsApp taking the lead, all of them lit up with false claims that the boy suspect was Muslim and an asylum seeker who had arrived in Britain by small boat. That's an echo of the Conservative Party's anti-immigration campaign slogan, "Stop the Boats." Within hours, riots mushroomed, cars were set on fire, Muslims harassed and sometimes beaten, stores looted and mosques attacked, as well as hostels and hotels that housed asylum seekers. Elon Musk himself posted on his own network saying, "Civil war is inevitable." Now for some actual facts. The alleged killer was in reality born and raised in Cardiff, Wales, to originally Rwandan parents, a family who are, rather needless to say, not Muslim. Fanning the flames of hate and violence was an individual with the redolently blokish name of Tommy Robinson. His real name is the less stereotypically English Stephen Yaxley Lennon. A touch of the Irish in there, you might think, however relevant or irrelevant that might be. He founded the self-styled English Defence League, a far-right group that not long ago was languishing in membership, regarded as moribund by observers of British extremism. And thanks to the modern miracle of digital communications, he was, after the stabbing deaths, able to do all his inflaming from outside the country. He claimed to be holidaymaking in the island of Cyprus, but it was at the least a convenient time for him to take a vacation, since he'd been summoned to appear before a UK judge on charges of contempt of court. The judge newly described his conduct, given the man's non-appearance before him, as a case of flagrant contempt. It's not been widely reported in the US media, but the riots we're talking about now were in fact the third time in recent British experience when a murder or murders were opportunistically exploited to direct hatred and violence toward people who had nothing to do with the original crime. In 2013, the killing of a lone off-duty British soldier by two Islamic fundamentalists in the street outside a London army barracks was what served to breathe new life into the English Defence League. Under its banner, there were demonstrations in several cities and several mosques were firebombed. In 2017, a series of jihadist attacks in Westminster, at a concert in Manchester, and on the roadway of London Bridge prompted the largest anti-Muslim protest Britain had ever seen, and they coalesced around the figure of our so-called Tommy Robinson, who thus succeeded in gaining highly vocal support online, and IRL in real life too, of course, from far-right activists all across England, Europe, and in America too. Another aspect of our August 2024 riots, which has not gained much American attention, is that they were successfully provoked far across England, but interestingly not in Scotland or Wales. Some did break out across the water in Belfast, Northern Ireland, where they prompted and illuminated a telling political split. The official reaction of the biggest pro-British party there, the Democratic Unionists, was to proclaim the right to protest against immigration, while all the other parties were determinedly condemning the riots outright. The sectarian divisions that have been traditional in Northern Ireland between pro-British Protestants and largely Catholic Irish nationalists are now not exactly eclipsed by anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim feeling, but the new kind of prejudice provides a piquant sidelight on those traditional divisions. While the Good Friday Peace Agreement has over the past 24 years brought a good deal of fresh prosperity to the province as a whole, the remaining pockets of decline tend to be in poor Protestant pro-British areas, and their often empty and usually cheaply available housing is where Northern Ireland's relatively few immigrants, a fair proportion of them Muslim, have been finding homes, and evidently triggering a new resentment among their inhospitable hosts. It's worth remembering that Northern Ireland is the least diverse territory of the UK. 95% of the population are white. But the small Belfast Islamic Centre in the middle of town was a target for the rioters, until they decided to spread out instead to torch individual immigrant businesses and vandalise and break into immigrants' homes. At least one such victimised resident sustained severe injuries and was admitted to the hospital after several thugs repeatedly stamped on his head. All is now relatively peaceful again across the United Kingdom as a whole. But how was that achieved? The new administration of Sir Keir Starmer certainly took swift action. We shouldn't forget that in an earlier career, Starmer was the country's chief prosecutor, and a smack of law and order comes easily to him in political office. While he remains a stickler for civil liberties, he was a human rights lawyer before becoming a prosecutor. Arrests were made tactically during the riots as an effective measure to defuse them, and then police officers in their tens of thousands were fanned out across the nation's cities as a preventive disincentive to recurring riots. Perhaps just as importantly, hundreds of thousands of civilians, anti-racism protesters, gathered in cities across the country, including Bristol, Birmingham, Liverpool, as well as London. They often chose as particular venues in which to demonstrate communities and sometimes specific buildings that the far right had been threatening. With all this solidarity on display, the summer evening that many feared would bring renewed violence turned into a quiet night of relief, which has so far continued. The country's discourse since then has been reflective, even while the steady churn of agitation continues in the usual dark corners of the internet. Discussion in the mainstream media has inevitably dwelt on public opinion polls. Some media have amplified the finding that a bare majority, 52% of Britons, agree that, quote, immigration is too high, while others have also pointed out that the same polling revealed a plurality of the population, totaling more than 60% when all put together, that believes immigration has been good for the country, or that diversity is now just a simple, everyday fact of life in Britain. These same mainstream media are urging that the Starmer administration speeds up its plans to tighten laws so they'll ensure that social media platforms are legally enforced to properly enact the policies they profess they have, banning hate speech and downright mendacity too. Mr. Musk, I think that includes you. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.